and welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and some newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start with Suzanne Selfors' book, Smells Like Pirates, and we're going to read Chapter 24. In the previous chapters, we learned that Lorelei, Homer, Dog, and Hercules escaped from the tower in Lulu Bell's hot air balloon. But upon landing, they learned of Madame la Directeur's escape from prison and that she was probably headed toward the lair. Go Jump in the Lake, Chapter 24. The word enemy is filled with ugliness. Hercules would tell you that it comes from the Latin inimicus, which means foe. Enemy isn't a word to be used lightly. For example, if your teacher assigns you a 50-page report on the composition of moon dirt, and you do not care one bit about the composition of moon dirt, then you might consider your teacher to be a bit of an annoyance. But he is not your enemy. Another example, if the girl sitting behind you in the movie theater keeps flicking popcorn seeds into your hair, you probably will dislike that girl, but she's not your enemy. A true enemy is someone who seeks to confound, overthrow, or injure an opponent. Madame la Directeur had done all three of those things. Confound, she lied to Homer about the membership coin, about his uncle, about Lost. Overthrow, she stole the membership coin from Homer, as well as all of his uncle's possessions, including the map. Injure? She murdered Homer's uncle, and then she tried to feed Homer, Lorelei, and Dog to her mutant carnivorous tortoise. Madame la Directeur wasn't simply Homer's enemy. She was his uber-enemy. After reading the newspaper article, Homer and Lorelei sank onto the bus bench, their bodies slumping like Lulu Bell's deflated balloon. "Now we'll never get the submarine," Lorelei said. "That old witch will never let me back into that lair." "She'll never let me in either," Homer said. "Or if she does," he thought, "it would be just like the Hansel and Gretel story where the old lady lures the little children into her candy house, only to enslave the girl and cook the fat boy over a fire." "It was a crazy idea, anyway," Hercules said, squeezing onto the bench between them. "We don't know the first thing about driving a submarine. There are all sorts of health issues with underwater travel. Too much pressure can blow out an eardrum. And then there are the bends. Have you ever heard of the bends? It's when nitrogen bubbles get trapped in your veins." "And it wasn't a crazy idea," Lorelei said, jabbing Hercules with her elbow. "It wasn't crazy at all." Homer remembered a day, not so long ago, when Uncle Drake had come to Milky Dale to visit. He arrived in his usual manner with an armful of strange presents for the two nephews and niece. A stuffed iguana for Gwendolyn, a miniature zeppelin for Squeak, and a new world atlas for Homer. After drinking lemonade and eating cherry pie with the rest of the family, Homer and Uncle Drake stretched out beneath the willow tree. They watched the ants trailing past, collecting twigs to carry back to their nest. Uncle Drake pointed to one ant carrying a stiff brown leaf. "See that little critter? It's got one thing on its mind. Get that leaf back to the nest. It is determined. Now watch this." Drake took off his shoe and stuck it right across the trail, blocking the ant's path. The ant wandered in a circle for a bit, but then took a sharp left turn and marched right around the shoe until it was reunited with the original path, the leaf still in its possession. Drake smiled. "Homer, my boy, if we had 1/10 of an ant's determination, we could do anything. With determination, anything is possible." Homer straightened his shoulders and took a long, deep breath. "It's not a crazy idea, that submarine. It belonged to my uncle, and I'm going to get it." Dog, who'd been eating in the front page of the newspaper, must have noticed the serious tone in Homer's voice, because Dog stopped chewing that page and looked up. Lorelei frowned, her pink bangs dangling over her defeated eyes. "I don't see how. She'll kill us if she sees us. Look, We can do this. We just flew a hot air balloon and we survived. Hercules and Lorelei shared a bewildered look as Homer darted to his feet. Lorelei, you're really good at being sneaky and you're really good at stealing things. And Hercules, you won the world spelling bee. I mean, come on, that's amazing. We've outsmarted Madam before. We can do it again. Okay, so how do we get into the lair? Lorelei asked. She'll be watching. She'll know if we come down the tortoise side, and an alarm will ring if the gate opens. We can't race in with the speedboat. Hercules shrugged. Don't look at me. I have no idea how to get into that place. I'll swim in and get the submarine, Homer said. The idea came to him suddenly as a burp. You think you could swim in there and not have Madam notice you? Lorelei asked. Yes, Homer said. With determination, anything is possible. Are you a good swimmer? Hercules asked. It's a long way down that tunnel. I can swim, Homer said. But he didn't say he was a good swimmer. When Homer turned 5, his mother signed him up for lessons at the Milky Dale Community Pool, and each summer following until he turned 10, she continued to sign him up for lessons. He began in jellyfish class, that's where you can float by yourself, and made it up to the bullfrog class, that's when you can put your face in the water and swim like a frog, but he never made it to the porpoise, which included all the other strokes. I can swim, he repeated. Well, what are we waiting for? Why are we waiting around here? Lorelei asked. She smacked Hercules on the back. Let's get ourselves on a submarine. Morning was in full swing, and there was no time to waste. They gave up the idea of hiking all the way around the lake to the public dock, where the speedboat was moored. Instead, Lorelei rented a paddle boat from a nearby stand, and they paddled as close to the gate as possible. You'll have to swim under it, Lorelei said. Homer peered over the edge of the paddle boat and cringed. Some bodies of water are meant for swimming. Mountain lakes, though cold, invite the swimmer with a soft ripple and a crystal-clear water. Lazy rivers tempt the swimmer with a deep pool of blue and green. Country clubs, community centers, and private residences skim bugs from the water and add drops of chlorine. City Lake, however, was meant for swimming. No, not really. Hence the sign posted throughout the park. Warning, this lake is not meant for swimming. Itchy rashes, unusual fungal infections, respiratory distress, swollen toes, and hair loss may occur after swimming in this lake, so do not swim in this lake. Homer, however, had not seen any of these signs because most had rotted away and were lying on the lake's bottom. The others were covered in pigeon poop. He removed his shoes and socks, T-shirt and jeans, so that he was standing in his boxers. The only thing that embarrassed him was about standing in his boxers was that he was wearing a pair of, with hearts all over them, picked out by his mother. Otherwise, a pair of boxers was pretty much like a bathing suit, so it was no big deal. He patted Dog's head. I'll be right back. I'm a good swimmer, Hercules said. Even though I don't have my swim goggles or my nose plug, I should go with you. He started to pull off his rugby shirt. No, Homer said. He turned his back to Lorelei and whispered to Hercules, You stay here and watch Dog. Make sure she doesn't take him. Lorelei leaned over Homer's shoulder. You don't trust me, she asked innocently. Not in a million years. Then he lowered himself over the side of the boat, breaking through a patch of yellow scum the way a spoon breaks through pie crust. The water was oddly warm. Dog balanced on his hind legs and leaned over the edge of the paddle boat, whining. Don't let him follow me, Homer said, remembering how Dog jumped out of the airplane in a desperate attempt to chase after Homer. Hercules wrapped an arm around Dog. Good luck, he said as Homer began to dog paddle toward the tunnel. Don't forget Daisy, Lorelei called. Bring her back. What? Homer nearly swallowed a mouthful of water. How am I supposed to do that? What about Speckles? Hercules asked. Oh, I almost forgot about Speckles, Lorelei said. He can't live in there with Madam. She'll feed him nuclear waste like she did to the tortoise. She'll turn him into a monster. Homer, you have to save Speckles. What? Homer stopped paddling and began to tread water. How am I supposed to get the submarine and rescue a rat and a whale shark at the same time? With determination, anything is possible, she said. You did say that, Hercules confirmed. Homer regretted those words, but he knew how badly he'd feel if Dog were left behind to live with Madam. After peeling a plastic grocery bag from his arm, Homer Frog kicked toward the tunnel. He passed through a bunch of fast food containers and plastic soda can rings that had tangled together like a field of man-made water lilies. The gate loomed before him, as ominous as the entrance to a medieval fortress. He grabbed hold and peered between two iron bars. Then, before he could panic, he took a deep breath and sank into the murky water. Keeping his eyes squeezed shut, he lowered himself to the bottom of the gate, swam beneath, then emerged on the other side. "Blech!" he said, wiping lake water from his lips. It tasted soapy with a hint of cod liver oil. Something floated toward him from the depths of the tunnel. It was a red ball. As the ball picked up speed, it became clearer that it wasn't floating. It was being pushed. A wide expanse of polka dots skimmed the surface of the water. With the red ball balanced on his head, Speckles the whale shark swam up to Homer. As he tilted his head, the ball rolled into the water. He nudged it toward Homer. "Wait a minute," Homer thought. "Rescuing Speckles might be the easiest part of this mission." Homer grabbed the ball, then he tossed it between the gate bars into the lake. With a smack of his tail, Speckles dove under Homer's feet and disappeared. "Lorelei," Homer called. "Here comes your shark." "Thanks," she called back. Hoping that the rat and the submarine would be equally cooperative, Homer pushed away from the gate and went into a frog kick mode. His arms ached at the halfway point, and by the time he reached the end of the tunnel, they felt as heavy as lead pipes. Homer's gaze fell upon the submarine. As silent as a water bug, he swam along the far edge of the lair's pool, his eyes adjusting to the bright lights. The place looked vacant. Maybe Madam had been caught by the police. He could only hope. Then he remembered Lorelei's request. "Daisy?" he called quietly, scanning the lair for a pair of beady eyes and a long gray tail. Where was she? "Daisy?" He was about to swim across and search the lair when a voice shot out of the back room, piercing Homer like a precisely aimed porcupine quill. "That'll teach her to bring rats into my lair." For as long as he had lived, Homer W. Pudding would never forget that voice. Clinging to the submarine edge, he watched as Madame la Directeur stomped into the lair. Then he grimaced as a gruesome scene unfolded. A lifeless gray rat swung by its tail from Madame's fingers. In her other hand, she held a shovel. She must have whacked the creature over the head. "Infested," Madame hissed. "My lair is infested." She opened a garbage can and tossed in the body. It hit the bottom of the can with a horrid thunk. "Poor Daisy," Homer thought. "Lorelei will be crushed." Even though Madam had the same slick black hair and was still shaped like a pear, with her upper half much smaller than her lower half, Homer almost didn't recognize her. She used to wear a ton of makeup and fancy clothes with high heels. Now she looked like she'd been camping in a baseball dugout. She dropped the shovel and wiped her hands on her jeans. Then she yanked the baseball cap off her head. "Look at all this junk," she said, turning in a slow circle. "My lair is full of toys, children's toys." She kicked a beach ball and overturned a beanbag chair. She kicked Hercules' first aid kit into the pool. Then she stomped to the vending machines. "Packages of brine shrimp? How dare she fill my vending machine with brine shrimp?" She pushed one of the vending machines over. Homer cringed as the clang echoed off the stone wall. He tightened his grip. Madam was out of control. She whacked Daisy on the head, and she'd probably whack him on the head, too. Her face clenched in a frenzied rage. "When I get my hands on that girl, I'll..." "What's this?" She picked up Homer's backpack. His mother insisted on embroidering his initials on the flap, just in case it got lost. H.W.P. Madam opened it and pulled out a black jacket, then a piece of paper. "Traditional morning attire for Mr. Homer W. Pudding." Homer Pudding. Homer Pudding. Then she looked around and softened her voice. "Oh, Homer, are you still here? Come out, wherever you are." Homer slid behind the submarine. Submerged to his nostrils, he peered out around the bow. A buzzer sounded and the flat screen lit up. Horizontal lines blinked and then Torch's face appeared. She held a glue stick and a piece of cut paper. The table in front of her was covered with little map pieces. "Hey, Lorelei, where the heck are you?" Madam's arms fell to her sides, and she dropped the coat and paper. "I need your help with this stupid map," Torch said. "Hey, Lorelei!" Madam tucked her T-shirt into her jeans, pushed a few stray hairs from her face, then strode across the room and sat on a red throne, facing the screen. "Hello, Torch." Torch's mouth fell open. The glue stick trembled and tumbled from her hand. "What do you think?" "Why, you look so surprised," Madam asked snidely. "I told you that I would escape. I told you that I would lead you and Gertrude on this quest." Torch narrowed her eyes. "Where's Lorelei?" "I don't know where the street urchin is," Madam said. "But she stole my red speedboat, and when I find her and that pudding kid..." "Homer?" Torch asked. "Homer's with Lorelei. Obviously the boy wants the treasure as much as we do. But if he's with Lorelei, then that means he's abandoned Loss. Yes, clearly." "I don't believe it." Madam leaned back in the red throne. "Homer doesn't matter right now. What matters is the map. Where's Gertrude?" "She had a little accident," Torch said in a humdrum way. "We were standing on the deck, and she suddenly toppled overboard. I tried to save her, really I did. The corners of her mouth turned up slightly, but all that jewelry pulled her right down to the bottom." Homer shivered in silence filled with glare. Gertrude was dead? Possibly murdered? Even though she was a traitor, this was a major loss to the organization. The lost membership was dwindling by day. "I see you are in the process of reassembling the map," Madam said. "I will be there shortly to assist you." "No," Torch blurted out. "No." "That's right, no." Torch's brow knitted, and she glared into the camera. "I don't need your help. So what if you've escaped? I have the map. I have Gertrude's yacht. I don't need you anymore. The plan has changed." "The plan has changed?" Madam repeated. She darted to her feet with so much gusto that the throne fell backward. "The plan has changed?" Torch winced, as if Madam's fury had reached through the screen and slapped her. "Do not forget, your tattoo-covered nitwit, that I'm the one who created the plan," Madam said, pointing a finger at the screen. "The girl is working for me. I persuaded her to go to the pudding farm. I told her about the map. Then I called you and Gertrude and told you to offer your services to her. I told her she could trust you to. She was idiotic enough to give you the map. That's her fault. But I'm the one behind this, so never, ever forget who's in charge. You wouldn't have the map if it weren't for me." Homer's fingers turned white as he gripped the porthole. Lorelei was working with Madame la Directeur. Maybe he shouldn't have been shocked. After all, she'd worked for Madame before. But Madame thought Lorelei had given Rumphold's map to Gertrude and Torch. So that meant that Lorelei was double-crossing Madame. Homer clenched his jaw. She would try to double-cross him, too. No doubt about it. She was playing a game with everyone, a game comprised of her own rules for her own benefit. No matter how many promises or pacts she made, Lorelei wanted the treasure for herself and no one else. Well, Homer could play games of lies and deception, too. At least he thought he could. He'd never really tried, but the right then and there, he knew it was necessary. He'd have to stop to Lorelei's level. Homer W. Pudding, nephew of Drake H. Pudding, wasn't about to limp Rumphold Smeller's treasure, a treasure the entire world was waiting for, fall into Lorelei's greedy hands. No way, no way. "You don't scare me," Torch said from the flat screen. Her hawk appeared and pecked at the camera lens. "You're an escaped convict. I'm going to call the police and tell them where you are." "You don't know where I am," Madam said, folding her arms and smirking with satisfaction. "Whatever," Torch said, pushing the hawk's hawk aside. "It doesn't matter that you've escaped. I don't need you. The point is, I have the map." "Oh, but you do need me," Madam picked up the red throne, brushed off its cushion, then sat down again. Resting her hands on the armrest, she spoke in a steadier, calmer voice. "You haven't put the map together. You're having trouble." "I ain't having trouble. It's just that there are a lot of pieces." Madam made a tisk-tisk sound as she shook her head. "My dear Torch, you're not a map reader. You don't come from a treasure-hunting family. Your head is filled with fantasies about Atlantis. That's why you never found a single thing in your life. You need my expertise. I can put the map together." The hawk leaped onto Torch's shoulder and nuzzled her cheek. torch, deep in thought, stroked the hot head. Then she stared at all map pieces lying in front of her. Okay, fine. You can help me. Then we'll have to get rid of that girl, Madame said. She knows too much, and that boy, we have to get rid of him too. Homer's heartbeat pounded as his temples just throbbed. Those kids ain't my problem. All I care about is the treasure. Torch uncapped at a glue stick. So, if we're going to put this map together, I want to make a new plan. This time it's just you and me. Deal? Deal, Madame said. Torch gave her directions to Gertrude's yacht. Then Madame reached out and turned off the screen. You and me, she said with a snicker. Of course, it's just me. And that's the end of Chapter 24. Next week, we'll start Chapter 25, called Underwater Driving, in Susan Selfer's book, Smells Like Pirates. Our next reading comes from the Animals Advocate, celebrating 45 years of justice for puppies and other animals. Volume 43, issue number 1, Winter 2024. This article, Justice for Victimized Puppies and Their Families. The Animal Legal Defense Fund's lawsuit against California puppy traffickers who knowingly sold sick animals to unsuspecting families resulted in a milestone win in November. After nearly 4 years of litigation, at least resulting in injustice for puppies who'd been treated so callously that some did not survive. Families were traumatized and in some cases financially devastated by vet bills when they discovered their new puppies were suffering from life-threatening illnesses such as parvovirus. Falsely presented as a sought-after designer breed who were healthy, vaccinated, and old enough to be weaned and sent home with new families, puppies sold by the Kennies on websites like Craigslist were later determined to be significantly younger than advertised, far too young to be separated from their mothers, and some of the puppies were different sexes than promised, or later found to have been dyed when their reddish-brown coat color washed off in the bath, revealing a puppy that was actually white. Vaccine records presented to families upon purchase were bogus. With your help, the Animal Legal Defense Fund took this on as an animal neglect and fraud case with pro bono support from the law firm Cotchett, Petrie, and McCarthy, LLP. After a week-long trial at the Los Angeles Superior Court, judge issued a decision prohibiting the Kennies from selling dogs and awarding significant damages to the families of the victimized puppies, including $100,000 in punitive damages, compensation for veterinary expenses, and $10,000 in emotional distress damages to each puppy's family. While no amount of money can undo a puppy's suffering, this decision is a monumental one for these puppies, their families, and countless other animals who stand to benefit when the legal system stands for innocent animals and against their abusers. This article comes from the Animals Advocate of the Animal Legal Defense League, Volume 43, Issue Number 1, Winter 2024. And we'll bring this program to a close with some interesting thoughts of people who have had animals in their lives. Jerry Seinfeld says, if aliens are watching through their telescopes, they're going to think the dogs are the leaders of the planet. If you see two life forms, one of them making a poop, the other one carrying it for him, who would you assume is in charge? Good question, Jerry. Dale Carnegie said, one reason why birds and horses are not unhappy is because they are not trying to impress other birds and other horses. Dan Greenberg said, there is, incidentally, no way of talking about cats that enables one to come off as a sane person. Dogs look up to you. Cats look down on you. Give me a pig. He looks you in the eye and treats you as you are an equal. So said Winston Churchill. A horse is dangerous at both ends and comfortable in the middle, according to Ian Fleming. And Oliver Gaspertz said a fish tank is just an interactive television for cats. Do you ever think about any of these sayings? How true are they for you and your relationship with your pet? And for those of you who might be considering bringing home a new dog for your home, here's some information. Check that your home is safe for your pet. ideally before you bring your pet home. For instance, secure any electrical cords they might chew upon, keep toilet lids closed, and make sure they can't get into any medication or household cleaners. Got a pool in your yard? If your pup can't or hasn't learned how to swim, think about getting a pool fence or a motion detector system that will go off if they fall into the water. Also, double-check that your pet can't get to any human food, some of which is toxic for dogs. If they are especially curious, you might want to use a child-proof latch to secure cabinets and trash cans. And those are some important thoughts for you if you're considering bringing a dog into your household. Well, we're now coming to the end of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.